Hey everyone, it's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest, you guys are going to love this show because when I first was introduced to Robbie's work, I had my SaaS hat on. So some of the terminology that she was mentioning was very appealing to me because it was all about, I thought, customer retention, loyalty, making sure that we reduce our churn. But it turns out there's even more stuff that she has to tell us about. And I'll let her get into that. But the word subscription was the word that was sort of coming, bouncing back and forth. Now, she's a subject matter expert in all things subscription. And she has her own firm called Peninsula Strategies out in California, where right now, as we are having this podcast, California is under fire, literally. So
California's on fire.
On fire, under fire. Hopefully you're breathing okay. But she's also the author of this amazing book called The Forever Transaction. You can see it in the back there of her on her mantle there. But we're going to talk about that. And we're also going to talk about her experiences. And I'm going to ask her, and I know she does this already, because I'm sure she bounces back and forth between subscription, which like a Netflix, think of membership when you think of subscription, and then subscription for us, which is how do we keep these people happy and retain them as clients and get the penetration and usage and loyalty that we're looking for. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Mary Lou.
Wonderful. So tell me, how did the book come about? And oh, she's also published by McGraw-Hill, which is one of my favorite publishers since my book is already there. So she's had the McGraw-Hill experience. So we are kindred in that as well. tell me about the book and how you decided to do this at this point in your career.
Yeah. So, you know, I wrote another book, The Membership Economy, 5 years ago. And I wrote that book because I felt like after many, many years in Silicon Valley, working with SaaS companies, working with consumer subscription companies, working with professional services firms and associations, that there was tremendous power in this long-term focus and reorienting an organization around a long-term value proposition instead of a short-term or episodic one. Mm-hmm. And I had come to believe that any business could do this. B2B, B2C, digital, print, old-fashioned, you know, physical product, you name it. And I was having trouble conveying this idea to a lot of executives. They would say, it doesn't work for me, or I don't understand, or we tried subscription once and it didn't work, therefore it would never work. And so I wrote my first book to say, hey, membership economy is a real thing. It's happening now. It could help you, you know, better predictive revenue, better understanding of who your customers are and how they use your products. And of course, that wonderful better multiple when you go to sell in the public markets. Right. 5 years later, I don't have to explain to anybody anymore that subscriptions are powerful. Yeah. But what I'm finding is people are struggling with the execution of the model. And so I wrote this book as a how. If the first book was a why and a what, this is how to do it, launch a subscription business, how to scale it, and then how to maintain your relationships and your leadership status over time without kind of growing long in the tooth and not relevant for tomorrow's members.
Okay. Well, as you know, I'm sitting here thinking, we all know this, that we put a big emphasis on sales. And marketing for us is a little bit of an afterthought. I mean, we love marketing from the standpoint of top of funnel inbound leads, but as soon as it becomes closed one, we kind of lose track of it from that point. Yeah. And you're here to help us understand that we don't want to lose sight of it because of these things, these multiples that you're talking about, the ability to get your company either bought out to go public, or even if you just want to grow and stay healthy within, you know, within the family, so to speak. The understanding of lifetime value for us is a term we all know, but you're right. We don't necessarily know how to execute or execute well. And you're here to tell us that we can learn from the B2C environment, business to consumer environment, or environments like that where there's a placement on membership that's highly coveted and maintaining those memberships versus us who we're used to that net new kind of wheel.
Yeah. New logos. Yeah. New, all about the logo chart, right? That slide with all the new logos and your board saying, hey, show me the new logos. What do you have? You know, what's new and sexy?
Right.
And I want to say, let's make retention sexy, right? That's the t-shirt I want to wear.
I am loving this talk. Yeah. Yes. I mean, I can think of two clients of mine right off the top of my head who one of them is 95.5, 95% base, 5% net new. Big company, gigantic. And they're lucky right now that they have the 95% who are pretty consistent. And they want to get better at that. So where do we start? How does this all work?
Yeah, well, so for any business that wants to enjoy all these benefits of, you know, of a membership mindset, you want to start by saying, what's the long-term value that I'm creating for my customer? And then build everything around the long-term value instead of the short-term episode. So that has a bunch of implications for salespeople. The first one is that you only want to sell to somebody who's going to stay for a long time, because you might even lose money if you acquire a customer and lose them too quickly. The cost of acquisition, your time, the time to onboard them, the time the customer success team is spending, that's all wasted if you don't deepen and expand the relationship over time. So so that's kind of like a starting point, is that your marketing funnel becomes a little bit narrower, right? Yeah. If you want to, the qualification process becomes more important because you're saying, I'm going to go, you know, it's like, if I'm just dating to have a good time, like, I don't really care, you know, if the person's attractive or interesting or funny or, you know, anything, maybe I'll go out with them once or twice. But if I'm thinking about marriage, and I'm thinking about having to spend the rest of my life with this person, I'm going to be a lot more particular about who I go on a date with.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the core idea of a member mindset, is if you want to enjoy that predictable recurring revenue, that huge lifetime value, it starts at the very beginning. It starts with how you market. Mm-hmm. It starts with how you choose, you know, who to have a transaction with at all. And then it continues kind of after that point of sale, like you said, you know, we're all about the close.
Right.
How does your customer success team onboard that new subscriber to maximize the likelihood of them making your products and services part of their new normal, part of their habits? And so it becomes really important, for example, that the sales team and the customer success team are working really closely, just like the marketing and the sales team on the other side, so that you're all kind of working together to have this long-term relationship.
And boy, there are so many areas of opportunity in that last statement you made about sales working with customer service, because it's not a common kind of bond between the two.
No. So I have a funny story for you. I was working with a SaaS company, and we were trying to figure out, we were working with their new customer success organization. So customer success as opposed to customer support, where the emphasis is more on making your customers really happy and deepening and strengthening the relationship as opposed to just waiting for them to call with a problem. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking at this new customer success organization, and we're trying to figure out how to optimize customer success for engagement, retention, expansion. And we did this exercise where we said, okay, let's look at all of our customers that we have. These were all, you know, B2B customers, and let's make two groups. I was asking the customer success manager, you're the ones that are really valuable. Or no, I asked the sales team, the ones that are valuable that have, you know, really been great and you want more of, and the ones that have kind of flamed out or not been valuable or been more troubled than they're worth. And we made the two lists, and I asked the customer success person to tell me what she noticed about the two groups. And she looked at the list of the good ones and she said, oh, those are my difficult clients. Those are the ones that are a pain in the neck. She said, those are the ones that on day one are like, I thought we were going to have this feature. How come we don't have this feature? And I'm trying to bring in my finance team and they don't understand how they're supposed to use it. And I need you to talk to them. And, you know, you said it worked this way, but I see it working that way. And I need you to fix that. Right. Mm-hmm. They were really difficult and demanding. And what we realized was that you know, the ones who were the most difficult and demanding were the ones who were trying to make this a habit. They were the ones that were trying to take this new product that they bought and actually use it really hard and get a lot of value out of it. They were taking it really seriously. So they were the best customers. And the ones that had the really, really easy onboarding process where they're like, we got it. We're all set. Thank you. We don't need any more help. Those guys were the ones that canceled or never expanded or flamed out. So it's kind of funny, but when you look at it that way, if you're a salesperson, like your customer success cohort, you know, colleagues, they're going to find the most valuable customers, maybe the most difficult. So it's kind of important to keep that in mind.
That is important. I mean, I wouldn't have thought of it that way. I always, my brain is always looking at usage, you know, and penetration within the account. So my brain says, if you have a lot of usage of whatever it is, your service, your product, and you found pockets within the new logo that you can deploy this thing. So you got a lot of people, a lot of seats, a lot of whatever, however you're selling your units of the software or service, you have a large number of those. So those by definition would be loyal, but I didn't overlay the fact that they're also engaging because they want to learn more and they want to know more. You know, they're challenging where they are right now along their success path, and they want to grow to become super successful, which, as you pointed out, then starts to become the new normal for them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That engagement is a leading indicator of what you're talking about. In order for the seats to be used and the expansion to happen, the employees, the users have to be engaged. And they and often a good signal that someone is engaging is that they're having questions and problems and challenges because they're diving in. They're, you know, they're exploring. A lot of times software companies, you know, find that, you know, we have 152 different features and our customers are only using one feature.
Yeah, right? One or two.
And like one of the key metrics that I think is really important in onboarding is, you know, usually a company wants to see, you know, like if they use two or three or five features in the first X period, that's a really good indicator that they're going to be a good customer.
Oh, nice.
So like a one piece of advice for people listening is to try to kind of backward, you know, sort of backward analyze and fig back into what are those features that when you see a new customer using those features, you say, oh, that's going to be a good expanding account for me. And then you can go to your customer success team and say, look, when you have a new customer, really focus on these three features, because that's going to lead to them really getting the value out of this, which is going to lead to them coming back to me and wanting to, you know, license, you know, subscribe to the next level up, access more features and so on.
Plus it gives you, and this is a big, big thing for me coming, because I'm trained as an engineer by trade. So I'm a computer programmer. But one of the biggest things that I think is important is to be able to suggest a path of success. You know, you start here and then we master this and then we add this thing on and then, you know, put a little salt on it. And then once we get that going, then we got this thing. So it gives them a progression path. It's like training for a Ironman or something. You know, you first you're running a mile, and then you, all of a sudden you're at five, blah, 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 blah. It's just like that. And I think we're missing that. We sort of like be free. We send people on their way.
Good luck to you.
And there's really, you know, we don't have the right metrics either, because I heard the cost of acquisition metric. We do have that. But what happens for usage and penetration and where they are on the glide path to success metric, I wouldn't even know what those are called. I couldn't even tell you. And how we're tracking those, I have no idea for lifetime value. And I think that's what's amazing in your world is you're starting with that. You're starting with the end in mind that they're a loyal client for life, and you're working backwards for that. That's interesting.
Well, it's so, I mean, you're bringing up, you know, such a great point about this path to success, or you called it the glide path to success. I love that.
Yeah, and I'm stealing that from my husband, by the way. He's a retirement person. So you're gliding towards retirement.
I'd love to be gliding towards retirement. So like any business, you know, you should be thinking about once you bring somebody in, you want to put them on that glide path to success. You know from your past customers what the best customers do, right? They
yes. are the best customers in the timeline, and you know there are some concrete chunks that you can put together. Now you may not be 100% right, but it's at least a baseline. You got a baseline.
Exactly. So then your customer success team or your onboarding team can say, our best customers often do this when they get started. They bring in these people and usually they do this kind of an exercise and we can facilitate that. Or you actually build that into the product itself so that it's kind of self-service. You get guided to the right features. So for example, you know, you talked about how, you know, I've worked with a lot of consumer companies. You know, mm-hmm. companies like Netflix or HBO or any of the streaming content companies, one of the things they want you to do, they know you're probably coming in for one piece of content, right? You came to Disney Plus because you wanted to watch Hamilton and you had no intention of the princesses, right? You're like, I'm going to sign up. I'm going to watch Hamilton. I'm going to get out of there.
Right.
But the job of Disney in onboarding you, which of course they do through the product itself, not through customer success people, mm-hmm. is to help you discover other content that you're going to enjoy before you cancel, right? So they're trying to help you reach other features before your month is over. So it might be the princesses, but it might be, oh, I didn't even know that National Geographic titles were available through Disney, or I didn't even know that you had these adventure titles. That's one way of expanding the relationship. Another one is they know from past experience that people who are enjoying their content on a tiny little phone are more likely to cancel than people who are enjoying the content on their great big smart TV.
Right.
So it becomes really important to build that into the product to say, you know, welcome to Disney Plus. Here are the steps you can use so that you can enjoy our content on your big screen.
And
they walk you through that because they know that if they help you get the best experience that their best customers enjoy, you're much more likely to make this a habit and you're likely to stay for a long time and be really profitable. Same principles apply with onboarding a new SaaS client.
Right. And the word friction, if you make it easy so that we don't have to think, then it's natural to like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. Like all of us now, I can't speak for all the audience, but since I'm not traveling, I am a Netflix junkie now because I'm constantly looking for, I like crime shows. So I'm constantly looking for crime shows, you know, and things that I can watch in the wee hours of the night because I'm usually at a hotel or doing something else. And now I'm home. And so the house can only get so clean and so much you can do. There's so many hostas I can plant. so it's like, it's been really interesting. And I have been watching how they keep me engaged. And it's the word frictionless really comes up because I can use that app. And I'm one of those crazy people who actually use my phone. My kids just chide me on that because they're like, how could you watch a movie on a phone, mom? But I do watch it. Yeah. I mean, I'm just that kind of person. So I don't care how big the screen is, but I do care about what's next after I finish this. And all of a sudden there's this what's next thing. Or if you like that, then you'll love this. It's like the Amazon thing. You know, if you like this, then you may like this. Or people who bought this also like that. And we can do similar things with our product. If you like the feature, this is the next step that would give you this kind of output, or you can use it for this type of scenario if you're working in this area. We don't do that. We're really bad at that.
And even in the prospecting phase, you can start to bring some of these elements into your conversation to say, you know, well, our best customers usually, they actually don't usually sign up for one feature. They usually sign up for two or three. You know, these are kind of the three features for companies like you. Usually what happens is, and you can kind of tell them their own story. I always think about, you know, for salespeople really understanding the customer journey. And it's not the customer journey with your product. It's the customer journey that drove them to buy your product.
Right.
So for example, if you provide, let's say you provide financial advice, right? You help people with their taxes and with their managing their budgets and with their investments and things, right? You could say, well, these are the points where they engage with me, but you could start by saying, what would make somebody want to invest time and resources into their finances? Well, mm-hmm. maybe they graduated from college and their parents told them it's time to be an adult. right? Yeah. That happens, as we're both parents of young adults, right?
Yeah.
Maybe it's because they want to buy a house. Maybe it's because they just got their first real job and they have real money and they're like, oh man, I got to be careful. Mm-hmm. So, and then we know, right, as the company, like, oh, anybody who just graduated from college, you know, probably they're going to want to get a credit card. They're going to start thinking about their credit. They're going to maybe, you know, in a few years, want to buy a home. They're going to maybe get married and combine resources. They're maybe going to have a child and want to plan for that. They're going to want to think about retirement. That those are all the steps in being a responsible adult.
Right.
And then you can explain that to your customer, right? Here, I see all the path that you're on. And our product helps you at every stage.
Yes.
But you lead with their journey and you lead with this understanding that this is what I know you're going to go through. And I know what the problems are that you're going to face. And our product moves along with you on your journey and solves those problems as they arise.
And plus, while you're telling those stories of current clients or people who have put their faith and trust in you, you're delivering social proof. So the decision process and that trust and rapport, it starts to build internally that, oh my gosh, they've worked with such and such, this type of university or whatever it is. And they have proof points that resonate with me. They know me, you know, so they know where I'm going to be going through. Introducing that up at the top of funnel where you mentioned in prospecting is the best place to start talking about this, because we're trying to get people emotionally engaged. That's the duty dating part. We're trying to get them to go on the date with us, right? So we're trying to get them to a point where they already know, love, and trust us, even though they just met us. And that is where we can bring in those stories. They're so important. Let me ask you this. What is the, or are surveys a part or important in learning more about where your clients are, or are we looking at data to help us make these decisions to see how they're using the product or service?
Yeah,
what did you say?
That's such a good question. First of all, you know, a lot of people will say to me, oh, you know, Steve Jobs, you know, people don't even know what they want. Steve Jobs never asked people what they want. He just knew. And I think that that is like oversimplifying the magic of Apple.
Yeah.
What I think you need to tease apart, and what I think Apple's really good at, is kind of the difference between what people say they want. People are really good at telling you what their problems are. Mm-hmm. They're experts on that. They're good at telling you what's hard. They're good at telling you what's frustrating. They're good at telling you how they spend their time and their money. What they're not good at telling you is how they should solve those problems.
Right.
Right. And so when you're doing market research, you don't want to ask them how they would solve the problem, but you can ask them what the problem is. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of understanding how they use a product, you know, we always joke in our family, people lie, right? People don't, they don't know. They're not going to tell you the truth. They're going to say they're going to use this feature or that feature, or that they need it, or that, you know, it'll be really important to them. But they're not trustworthy. And so if you have behavioral data, if you can actually see how they use the product, that's going to be much more valuable than what they tell you they're going to do. Like, oh, if I have a Peloton, I'm going to ride it 5 days a week.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, no, like, it turns out it's more like twice a week.
Yeah.
Because
coding the rest of the time.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much aspiration,
hopefulness.
And also there's, when you do market research, people want to be nice to you. So people are going to usually be much more positive in their answers. So one thing that I've done with market research is, you know, if you say to them, and if I had this product, you know, tell me about your problems. Okay. Is this one of your problems? The thing that my product solves? Yes. Okay. If that's one of your problems, do you think that this would solve it? Yes. Great. If I offered you a 10% discount right now, would you buy it? And then they're like, well, you know, no, I got to talk to my colleagues. I got to. And then if they're pulling out their checkbook and saying, I want first dibs, then you know you're onto something, because they're ready to put their money where their mouth is. Whereas a lot of times people will say, oh, that's really interesting. What a great product. And then they say, no, it's not really for me, but I'm sure there are other, whenever a prospect says, I'm sure there are other people out there that would love this, but I don't really need it for these reasons. you know that you have not found a product market fit.
Right, right. And really, we're looking for the quality of product market fit and let all the other ones find their own path.
Yeah.
And that's another very difficult thing for us as SaaS companies, because a lot of, like you said, the board's always looking for net new and what have you done for me lately? And so this whole nurturing of the base is, although we see it, we hear it's more expensive to get a new client than to maintain a current client. We hear that, we know that, but we don't necessarily have a systematic approach or a methodology that we feel would be more predictable for us so that we could, you know, take the time and put it in. It is always seemingly the afterthought. But now as we are maturing, all of us in the SaaS world, it's becoming more important. So that when I saw your book, I was like, oh, you know, and it's the how, even how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think the good news is that a lot of investors, a lot of board directors are becoming more sophisticated about understanding the power of subscription.
Yeah.
And they're interested in ARR and, you know, annual recurring revenue and monthly recurring revenue metrics. They're understanding churn more, and it's really the responsibility, I think, of the company to educate their board on what the leading metrics are and what is important, to say, look, we're not going to show you, we have some logos, but we're not going to show them to you because that's not where you should be focusing. We're going to talk to you about retention, engagement, expansion, our increasing understanding of the journey that our customers go on, and our ability to predict. I know predict is your word, right? To predict when a new prospect becomes a customer, we have confidence in predicting what their lifetime value is going to be. And that's what you should be excited about. Not that we have a new customer, but that we know the value of that customer on day one.
Once we get them, and we culture our lists and our outreach based on this ideal profile of this correct customer for us. We're not just throwing crap at the top of funnel. Anything warm will work. We're actually doing a total addressable market study. But out of that is, where do we fit? Where is the total serviceable market? The serviceable market that we know we can retain these clients and have a very high lifetime value rate. That's the biggest conversation I have with people right now, is the difference between total addressable market. Yes, great. But what's the serviceable market? And I'm now going to steal some of your stuff because I could never really describe what that meant. And it is lifetime value, but if we could put some beef behind it as to why it's important, maybe I'll get people to actually buy into that. I can tell you that I see the eyes go blank when I start talking TSM, total serviceable market. People are looking at me like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, it's very sophisticated. I think, you know, one way of thinking about it is, like, I always talk about, like, in the most basic language, your best customers and your not best customers.
Right.
And your not best customers are the ones that leave too soon before you start making money off of them.
Right.
Your not best customers are the ones that are very expensive to service.
Yes.
And to start thinking about that and to say, and look at this, all the best ones are the ones that have stayed a long time. So let's talk about how we get them to stay a long time and why they're more valuable. Well, look, in month one, we're still losing money on them because of everything we spent on our sales team and our onboarding and, you know, acquisition. Right. It's only on month four that we're actually making a profit.
Right. And let's drill down on that. And a lot of us have a handful of clients with whom we can do this type of analysis. And if our record keeping is decent, we should have some of these data points in our databases, our, you know, CRMs, our customer relationship management systems, and we can start tracking that. So we have the ability to do so. I think it's understanding what a good recipe would be is where we're still sort of like, I'm not quite sure how this all fits together, but we are, there's these, you know, new, I would say new with quotes because I've been doing sales for 35 years now, and So what's new is really old, but there's this new concept called the pod that, you know, a few years old, coming out of Silicon Valley, actually, where we're combining the account manager role inside of the pod with salespeople. So they're all sitting now together and they're looking at holistically the client, you know, the how do we expand them? How do we service them? What is their usage and penetration? What, who are the referral sources inside of this client that we can leverage for referrals instead of having to go outbound and outreaching every time prospecting that we get referred in, because getting a warm referral in is going to shorten the timeline to get to close. So those are the kinds of things that are starting to come up now for those companies who have matured in their, you know, SaaS world. And I think this is a perfect topic for them now to dive into this part of the funnel, which, you know, frankly, we, a lot of companies have ignored, because there's this mentality that there's a big world out there of net new that we can go after.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love the idea of where you put together. What are the, like, top three things that people are listening here, they're buying into all this, you know, where do we start? What's like the top three things that we should, homework for us to go do to start to sort of compile, is this right for me to dive into this? Besides reading your book, which everybody grab your book and do that. But, you know, what are the things that you see all the time that you're like, okay, just do these three things to get started. Give it a go. These three things. Do you have that or what are they?
Yeah, I think for salespeople, if that's your lever, and you, it's, you know, number one is to focus on who's your best customer for lifetime value, to try to optimize
the AB, best customer, not best customer.
Best customer, not best. Start there. and you'll find you're saving yourself a lot of time, because you're not wasting your time talking to the not best customers. And so if somebody comes in, you know they're going to stay, you know you're going to continue to get revenue from them, you know it's going to expand. Number two, make the people on either side of the customer relationship chain your two best friends. So on the one side, marketing, so that they give you the kinds of leads that are going to lead to expanding relationships. And on the customer success or customer support side, make sure that they know how to onboard new customers to maximize lifetime value.
Now, when you say that, the personality type of the customer service people that I have the privilege of working with are very reactive people.
Yes. In nature. Okay.
Go ahead.
I hear you. Yes. And so this is the difference between customer support. And again, it depends on, you know, who's listening and how much leverage they have within their organization. A lot of times salespeople have a lot of clout.
This is the perfect world, the perfect bubble. The COVID is out
there. In the perfect world, you say, I don't want customer support people. I want customer success people who work as partners with me. Okay. It's not enough. So the difference between customer support and customer success, as you just said, is customer support is reactive, fix the thing that's broken, wait for the squeaky wheel. Customer success is proactive, right? Reach out to the new customer and make sure that they are on that nice glide path to getting tremendous value. I always say a customer success person is about making sure that the customer is getting the value they're paying for. Right. Because if they're getting the value they're paying for, they're going to be happy. They're going to want to expand. They're going to want to be referable. They're going to want to do more with you if they're getting value. So the most important thing that happens after they sign the contract is how quickly can you get them to value?
Right. Okay.
So, you know, if you have to talk to your customer success lead or your customer support lead, or if you have to go to your CEO and say, we need customer success, not customer support. Or if you have to just go find the best customer support person on the team and say, you know, this is like I don't want the CEO to hear this, but I know that like if I was a salesperson, right, and I had a customer support team supporting me instead of a customer success one, I would be looking for who is the person on the customer support team who is the most proactive, the most sales oriented, the most results oriented.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
I would give my clients that person's phone number.
That person. Okay. Great advice. Because that is definitely the reactive versus proactive. If I were to interview all my clients right now, I don't think there's a proactive one in the bunch that's under the support or professional services side of life. No. Yeah.
And to change it, like if you are in the, like, it sounds like you have clients where you have the power to change that. The first thing that you do is you change their metrics, right? What are there's most customer support people, their metrics are like, shorten the call, get them off the phone, tear up the, you know, tear up the ticket, right? Like those are those. And what you want it to be is, you know, of course, net promoter score or something, some kind of a loyalty metric. Maybe you also want to look at retention rates. So, you know, each customer support person has a certain set of accounts they're supporting, and what's the retention rate and how do they compare with one another?
Right.
And then expansion. Are these customers buying more? Are they more seats, more services, new products? And put that into, you know, the customer support dashboard.
Okay. Yeah.
That'll change the way they behave, and it'll change who gets rewarded and recognized.
That's a great, great advice. So that was two. We have one more from you. Our bonus one. You kind of gave us the whole profile of the proactive versus reactive. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. And I think the last thing I would do is focus. I think we talked a little bit about this, but focusing, feeding back. Salespeople are on the front lines. They're seeing the customer. They're hearing the language the customer is using. Mm-hmm. They're very aware of what the headline benefit is that's going to get someone to close.
Right.
And they're also really good. They also often hear, hey, you promised me this and it didn't work.
Right.
And so I know salespeople don't always like to do this because, you know, their time is so precious, but taking the time to give that feedback to your marketing friends and to your product friends to say, look, this is the problem they're coming for. They don't use 99% of the features. We can expand that, but let's focus on getting right that journey in order of the features, right? So giving that feedback back to your colleagues is only going to make it easier for you to close the next deal and for that next deal to expand and grow in a way that makes it easier for you to exceed your number and, you know, and frankly, delight your customers, which is, you know, the most motivating of things is to have your customers say, you know, you changed my life. You made my job so much easier. You helped me achieve my goals and get my bonus, all of that as well.
Or have more time for my family or whatever the result, the protection or security or advancement that they're looking for, you were able to deliver that. And that's just a great feeling all the way around. It's a good, really good feeling when you know you can do that. Well, this has been a lovely discussion and I very much appreciate your time. So we know to go get the book, Forever Transaction. We know your website. Oh, we have
Robbie.
Go ahead. Give us your website.
Yeah. It's my name, RobbieKelmanBaxter.com.
Okay.
And you can find, I have lots of resources there and videos and content and lots of help with all the different parts of how you build this kind of predictable engine for growth and profitability. It's like right aligned with Mary Lou's work.
It's totally.
He's in a pod.
And it just takes off. I mean, I'm top of funnel. Then someone does getting to closed, various people. And then you take it from there. And then that's the feedback loop is the third advice you gave to us is probably one of the most important things that shame on us with technology and everything that we have. We can, you know, it takes what, 30 seconds to a minute to wrap up a conversation saying it was this product or this feature, this was the issue, and then trace that back into marketing or to customer success. And we, you know, we're guilty of not doing that. So I think that's a big lesson for us is a little bit of record keeping goes a long way in order to further the conversation later, shorten the lag in the pipeline, raise the conversion rates of getting to close. It just, it's feel good all the way around if we're good and diligent about doing this. Thank you so much for your time. Very much appreciate it. We'll make sure all of your notes and all of the links are on your page. And we very much appreciate your taking the time sharing this information with us.
Oh, so such a pleasure to talk to you, Mary Lou. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.